Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast that teaches you a single shot or strategy with every single episode. My name is Michael O'Neill here in Long Beach, California. I'm joined by Senior Pro, Mr. Scott Fliegelman, who is in Dallas. Is that right now?
It looks like Dallas outside my hotel room, yes.
You're in Dallas for the, is it the third installment of the NPL, the Senior Pro Tour?
Yeah, NPL number three. We're back in Texas. Chicken and Pickle, thankfully, has lovely air-conditioned indoor courts for us. Got a practice session in this afternoon. An 80s-themed dinner party. I made an early exit to come here and podcast with you.
Had you hair, you would have spiked it.
I was so ill-prepared. I was happy to take off.
I actually have a picture of us from, I want to say, 98 or 99.
I remember that.
At Fila Outdoor, you were wearing a pink popped collar shirt, and I had like a light blue one. And we had an 80s party, I think at Fila Outdoor, right?
And I had hair. You're right.
You had hair. We were spiked and popped. So today, I'm actually changing things up on you a little bit. We had a whole plan for a show on fourths, the fourth shot. And I'm going to tweak it on you because I just did a tournament here. And I wanted to do a little debrief on the tournament because I wanted to not only share my experience, but I want people to understand that post-tournament, there are things you can do to improve. But before we do that, you got a couple shout-outs you want to make. And I would love to hear your experiences with these shout-outs.
That's usually your job, but I've been so stoked to meet a handful of our show listeners who have made the journey to Boulder Pickleball from around the country. Avid listeners, great players, and they've come for lessons and to join us for open play. So Ricky from Steamboat Springs, Colorado, who we're going to see again, he's bringing some more peeps down with him in a week or two. Jeremy from Buffalo, just had a chance to meet Joe and Christina from Boston. You guys were awesome and loved having Stephanie from Highland Park, Illinois for a great lesson. I was sharing with you earlier, Mike, it's just so fun to have lessons with our listeners because they're preloaded. They're students of the game. You know, we get right to it on the court. They've got great questions and it's really rewarding. And I hope I've been able to guide you guys toward the next level of pickleball. I hope we can see you again.
Now you shared something with me. I believe it was Stephanie from Highland Park that her coach, that we've sort of become an integrative part of her coaching. Is that correct?
Yeah, I need to learn a little bit more, but you know, it sounds like Stephanie and her coach and some fellow players out there are show listeners. And you know, I'm so excited to hear that and would love to come visit and have a chance to get on court with some of these players.
Well, if you guys would like for us to pop out to your town and do a 4.0 to Pro clinic and potentially a live podcast with you, drop us a line, 4.0topro@gmail.com. That's all spelled out. You can also reach me at, or both of us, either at Boulder Pickleball on Instagram or 4.0 to Pro, 4.0, the number, 4.0 to Pro on Instagram. And if you can put a group together and we can make it work, we are very open to that conversation. We have a blast doing this and would be honored to teach you guys. So Scott, this last weekend, we had a CAPA tournament, which I believe is the California Pickleball Association. I cannot, first of all, tell you the vast contrast between my experience with CAPA and my previous tournament experience with the PPA. If I never play another PPA tournament, I'm not afraid to say this, it will be too soon. It was just such a negative feeling, not only from me, but from so many people, especially at the senior pro level, that felt like we were an afterthought in that tournament. And it was so expensive. It was $405 and we didn't even have a place to put our bags. We had some people that signed up for doubles, which started at 8 a.m. that weren't done until midnight. So it was just this complete and utter mess. And I thought, I'm cool. I don't need to do that again. CAPA, by contrast, is run by these lovely people. The cost was, I want to say it was about $65 per event, which isn't terrible, but I got a hat and I got a pair of socks and there was water and there was, you know, it was just a good vibe. It's weird how something that could cost a tournament, probably literal pennies, when you talk about a pair of socks, there's probably 75 cents or, you know, $3 or whatever it is, can make such a difference in terms of the vibe and how somebody feels at a tournament. It was just so much better. But like, I wanted to chat with you specifically, Scott, because some things happened prior to gameplay, during gameplay, and then post gameplay that I think you can offer some insight on since you've played in a billion tournaments. And so are you comfortable with that as a show theme?
Let her rip. Bring it on.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I was in Kansas City. I played at Chicken and Pickle. I didn't have any good games. Everybody was a 2.5, 3.0, which is fine. It was okay, but I didn't get to stretch my, you know, pickleball game too much. Until the very end, I was actually there casually. I was there having drinks with a group of people that I'd met a couple days before. And I was in, you know, Converse low tops and regular dress shorts and a regular t-shirt. And I saw this group of guys playing and they were really good. They were probably 4 or 5+ and they just got off the court and it was sweltering even inside. And I go, guys, would you be okay? Could I play one game with you, please? And so I actually ended up using the official Chicken and Pickle paddle, which is, you know, a very inexpensive paddle that they bulk ordered, you know, with no grip and it's very light and whatever. And we had a nice game, but something happened during that game, which I thought was interesting. I've been playing with the Carbon 1X now for a number of months, 6 months or so. And this thing had nothing. It was like hitting a sponge. But I was surprised by truly how much more control I had on the ball, even though this paddle didn't really have anything. But like every ball was staying in. Didn't have a lot of pace on it, but I thought, that's really interesting. And when I came back to Long Beach, I switched from my Carbon 1X back to a regular Carbon 1, much like you did, you know, not long ago. And I started playing with it that week. But of course, like you mentioned, I was indoor at Chicken and Pickle. And now I'm back to being outdoor in Long Beach. I was still very impressed with how the paddle hit all week. I even played some singles with it. And it was like, man, I really miss having a little bit of zip on my two-handed backhand, because it just wasn't there for me with the Carbon 1. But everything else was like, yeah, I can live with this. Like, I feel like if the ball is going to go long, it's because I really hit the crap out of it. It's really absorbing a lot of the energy from my arm. So I'm not hitting a lot of balls out. There wasn't as much spin on it, but I thought, you know, I'm going to use this for the Kappa tournament. I'm going to use this one. I'm going to feel pretty good about it. Well, like I got to 4 or 5 doubles with my new partner, first tournament with him. We had drilled during the week. We actually flowed very well together, despite the fact that he wasn't a listener to the podcast, which is shocking. But I thought we played really well together, but it was evident within a half of the first game that I was using the wrong paddle. It just didn't have what I needed. Like I got into a couple of firefights and went, oh man, I'm feeling behind in these because I can't get the thing back as quickly as I'd like, and it's coming right back at me. So this started mistake number one, which was me feeling like I needed to go back and forth with my paddles. And I switched a couple of times during the day. Before I make this into a monologue, can you talk about the don't change too much stuff before a tournament rule?
Well, first I want to say, listening to the last part of your monologue, that when it comes to the equipment decisions, especially heading into a tournament, it's complicated. And I think part of that is because the high end of like pro pickleball is only like 5-ish years old. And then we've talked about the modern era of paddle evolution technology is like 18 months old or so. So this is all evolving as we speak. And then add to that, what ball are you playing? What altitude are you playing at? Are you indoors? You outdoors? How cold is it? There's just a bunch of other variables. How windy is it? What weight are you playing that paddle at? There are a lot of variables. And in the end, the founders envisioned and the current caretakers of the game continue to enforce that this is still, in essence, a driveway sport. The equipment's not supposed to be all that technologically advanced, and we're just doing our best, and our manufacturer friends are doing their best. We've watched the price of an average paddle quadruple in the last year, at least at the 4.0 plus level. So, yeah, listening to you discuss, I can see why there was some confusion, but if I had a chance a week to 10 days ago to guide you, I would have said, wait on any paddle changes. Stick with the X. You're most familiar with that. I hear you on your experience with the cheap paddle, and I can see the allure. I've found it myself, but that's the only paddle I'm playing with right now. I've not gone back and forth. I decided for 2023, I'm playing the Control Series, and I'll pick up with the X in 2024 and resume singles and outdoor pickleball and Franklin's. So my decision was very ball specific, very venue specific, and I'm not playing a whole lot of outdoor tournaments.
Well, that's worth noting as well is the tournament Kappa specified Franklin balls for it, which are obviously softer, and especially in the heat. With a softer paddle in the heat, it just didn't have anything on it. And I really noticed it. So we were playing games to 15. I want to say there were seven. They split us into two divisions, an A and a B. And you had to sort of graduate from your bracket. We had to play six games. And we ended up going 4-2. We won the first two. We're feeling pretty good. And then things really unraveled in the second games. And this is really where the onus of this conversation, I thought, would be important. Previously, my role, we would switch sides with my partner, which again, we were fine. Each of us has positives and negatives on each side. He's got a lovely backhand flick, and I've got a pretty lethal forehand when it's on. But let's not give our opponents something to target or to get comfortable with. So we were okay not stacking, which really served us the first couple of games. I rely on a dynamic game. We just talked about third shot drives to fifth shot drops. That is probably 70% of how I play the game. I think people are used to that. But as we discussed on that previous episode, there's not a whole lot you can do with a really well-placed hard drive. Like, you're not just going to put it away. You're going to get it back with a nice block volley and probably give that person a fifth shot drop. So that is a bit of my bread and butter. And when that's on, I feel very comfortable with that. If I drop, I'm comfortable with what those shots look like as well. Unfortunately, they weren't, because of my weird paddle thing, my drives weren't great. I didn't have a lot of zip on them. So I was trying these drops and sometimes they'd be short and my thirds weren't going well in those second set of games. So 2-2-2. And this is where I think I made a big mistake is that my partner said, hey, these guys can't, and whatever he said, he's like, they can't drive or whatever, just put up some, you know, floater drops or just float some balls. So I decided to say, okay, I'm going to be a team player here. And I just tried to do these sort of high floaty thirds, which were terrible. I was hitting them long. It's just not a ball I hit. It's not a thing I do on a regular basis. And it got really chippy between us from there, because in addition to that, he said, let's stack. And so he went on the left-hand side and I went on the right-hand side. To me, disabling the best weapon we had on the court, which is my forehand, which is better than his backhand flick. And so now I'm sort of in this spot where I'm not comfortable hitting what I'm hitting and I don't have my number one weapon. And things really got a little chippy. So I guess my question first to you, Scott, is what do we do on court when we're trying to pacify our teammates and we're trying to make sure they're having a good time? We've all paid money for this tournament. We've worked on it. We've tried to come in with a nice sharp point. But when it's not going well, what kind of strategy do you tend to teach or employ?
Well, first I have to ask what should be a rhetorical question. Does this lovely Kappa tournament afford you timeouts?
Yes, of course. And we did take
it. Okay, great. Okay, so I would start with one of those.
Yeah.
I actually dig the essence of what your partner was trying to share with you. There's a couple of elements of his phraseology I may have changed had it been me. I would have started, and we've shared this a little bit on the show before, I would have started with first person plural and said something to you. How about if we decide to miss our thirds a little long and a little high, play some scrappy defense in the transition zone, work our way in on the fifth, seventh, ninth, not just point the finger at you, even though you were the one struggling with the thirds. Yeah, that sits well with both players. I don't quite get the lofted up there concept. You have a really great forehand drive. if it's off, then I'm going to be suggesting, let's make it 60%. Let's hit them up, make them hit, you know, just hit them a medium pace line drive, get it in, make them hit a fourth, take your chances on the fifth, seventh, and ninth. I'm guessing you tried that.
Yes. But
those would have been the words I would have been using with you.
So just to clarify a couple things. Number one, if you looked at if there was film of the whole thing, you wouldn't look at me and go, oh, that guy was making most of the mistakes. We were both equal opportunity mistake makers. The challenge I had was that his mentality was, let's get to the line as quickly as possible, which of course we both want to do. What would happen is, as I'm hitting my third, he was bum rushing the net, which put, as we've spoken about before, puts a ton of pressure on whoever's hitting the third, because if it's not perfect, your teammate's getting nailed, which happened a number of times. And I said, bro, you have to, if I'm going to hit this, you have to give it time. We have to defend if we have to. So we just had some communication on the court that to me was a little rough. And it felt sometimes it felt a little panicky. I felt like we could have withstood the storm with a 15-point game. It's tough. It's a little longer than a sort of standard 11, but you know, if this were best 2 out of 3, there is a different profile that happens from game to game sometimes. And sometimes you get down and go, geez, I don't know if we need to write this one off or just like reset our brain because we got a new game now. We just got beaten 11-4. Okay, now let's focus on this game. And sometimes you get it a full clean slate. But because it was just one game to 15, the pressure was a little higher. And I don't know that we withstood the storm that well. So if I had to critique on my end, I wish that he had not bum rushed the net as much. I wish that we hadn't stacked like we did because it, again, disabled my weapon. And then I wish I just played my game knowing what I know. And I'll tell you what I did to reset that for the next two games, but I'd like to hear your commentary on that.
Yeah, let me go back to this dialogue that you were having ostensibly during a timeout. And there was a missing piece, I guess, putting myself in his voice to you, but it certainly could have been from you to him. How about if we miss our thirds a little high and a little long? And then the part that I missed earlier was, let's chill and assess the quality of their fourth. Then we'll scrap it out in the transition zone and work our way in the fifth, seventh, or ninth. And what's communicated there is neither one of us goes bum rushing in. Neither one of us puts a ton of pressure on our partner who's hitting the third. In fact, if you know that your partner's not going to blow right through the assessment period and just dive bomb it into the kitchen area, then it takes the pressure off. You guys were feeling pressure on your thirds, and you just need to know that your partner's going to chill, watch you hit, and then modulate the throttle accordingly. And he wasn't doing any of that. So that was putting added pressure on you. I don't mind the idea. You know, you were sort of taking the blame for yourself on thirds. I was going to suggest that you stack and put him on the left and task him with taking most of the thirds. If he was missing his thirds, then the same advice applies to both of you of like, just let's make sure that the person not hitting the third chills and takes the pressure off, and we scrap it out in the transition zone on the fifth and seventh.
Right. That was my mindset. And so what we did is we went 2-0 first, and then we went 0-2. So now we're 2-2 in the tournament. We have two more games to play. And then we had a bye. Thankfully, we had a perfectly timed bye after this second loss, because I think it would have been worse had we not. And so we took a minute. You know, it felt very tense between us as well. And we got away for a couple, took a deep breath, relaxed. I got my heart rate down a little bit. And I said, hey, man, let's get on a court and let's drill a little bit. I need to find my mojo again. I picked up my 1X. I said, I'm not using the other one the rest of the day. I'm going to go back to, you know, the thing I'm used to. And we drilled and drilled and, you know, and drilled for 10, 15 minutes. Felt a million times better. Got on the court for the next match, whipped them, and then got on for our what would become our final game. And we were up solid. And this is where the thing has got a little weird again. We were up 14-7 or something like that, or 14-4. I think it was like 14-4. So we had it well in hand. And then all of a sudden it was 14-7. And he's like, let's stack. Let's, you know, I was like, no. Let's just stick with what we're doing to get to 14. And we did, and we ended up winning the next point. And we won that game. So we got done. Afterwards, it was amiable, but he and I have not had this conversation yet in terms of like, let's break down what we did on court and how we could have improved. I'm going to take some of these things from you. Let's change the dialogue around it. You know, let's do a we instead of you, and let's not crash the net. That was the thing, is his stance was, I can go head to head with anybody. So let me just get to the net as quickly as possible. It's like, okay, great. I'm excited about, you know, fast hands and things like that. But we just really struggled in the transition zone for those games. And that's why we didn't win. So part of why I wanted to have this conversation with you was just like, I want everyone to appreciate the dialogue first, that I'm going to definitely take some responsibility for how I played and the choices I made going into this tournament. And I want all of us to do a nice self-assessment, whether you're playing in a rec game, but you know, why did we lose that game? What happened there? Is my partner getting nailed by shots? If so, probably your fault, unless they're the ones popping it up. If you're speeding up cross court, like we covered on a couple of episodes ago, or popping the defensive balls up or whatever, and they're getting nailed, that's something you can work on. So I want to make sure that I am square and that I know what I'm doing in that position. Your thoughts, Scott?
You joked earlier in the show that he was not a Forward to Pro listener, and we both laughed, but that could make a huge difference. And not that everybody out there has a podcast, but I would... If we could have jumped back in time a week or two, I would have suggested you guys meet for coffee and maybe have a philosophical discussion about, you know, style of play.
We did actually do that ahead of time. And I was surprised that there was the kind of breakdown we had, but we'd never faced that kind of adversity before.
Then let's be grateful for that. You know, I mean, I don't believe this was on ESPN or for $100,000, and you're on the journey to pro. So let's, you know, thankfully we had this experience. You still went 4-2.
Yeah.
You know, you faced some difficulty. You learned some lessons on the equipment side of things, on the partner communication side. And, you know, if you have a partner like this again, I mean, I think the big issue there is the decision to just rush to the non-volley zone with no concern whatsoever for the quality of your partner's third. I mean, that's just not, that's not in this level of play, you know.
Agreed.
Or it really shouldn't be. It just puts too much pressure on you.
Right.
So those are great lessons to have learned. You should be grateful for those. It sounds like you are.
I am. Really quickly, the next day, what a difference a day makes. I played my first mixed tournament and we ended up with the bronze, which was great. I felt very good about that. My partner, Michelle, was awesome. Shout out to Michelle. Can't wait to play with her again. It's going to be awesome. One thing I vastly underestimated, if you guys share this, if you experience this as well, is the amount of effort required. If it's a mixed team and the other team is targeting the girl or whoever, the person who's not you, the amount of like massive cardio. I felt like I was in a cardio class for 3 hours because of how much prep you have to do, how much movement you have to do to be ready for whatever that next shot is. It was crazy. I was pinned at like 150 BPM on so many points and I'm like soaked going, I had no idea I was going to work this much and never touch a ball during a point. It's crazy, dude. So that was a very rookie move for me. And it also took me a couple of games just to understand my role. We lost, actually. I want to say we lost our first two games and then I think we won the next bunch. But like, I didn't realize how much she was relying on me to really clog middle and take, you know, attackable balls with my forehand. She was this perfect partner in that respect. But it was more than I was used to. When you play rec ball, it's not something you see very often where someone's really dominating that middle. But we're playing against teams where, you know, I'm against a guy who's 6'4 and playing 3/4 of the court, 4/5 of the court. And it's really hard to get it by him. And he's a big guy. But yeah, man, really interesting and super fun. And I can't wait to do it again.
Well, I had that experience this afternoon at practice playing alongside Scott Moore, who is 6'2 or give or take and covers a lot of court. And, you know, my role there is to let him do his thing. And, you know, if I had a pedometer on or step counter, I think that's what it's called, the number wouldn't have been all that high. And then I practiced with Eva Welsher, who is just, you know, one of the top, you know, all around senior pro players. She plays the right, I play the left, and I cover, you know, 3 times the amount of the court that I did right, just a half an hour earlier. And you need to be able to play both of those roles. So it's somewhat mixed oriented, but who covers more court, Ben or Colin?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, 100%. Colin doesn't move around a whole lot. He slides right, but Ben's covering a lot more court. So it certainly can be in gender doubles as well, but you just see it a lot more in mixed.
Yeah. On the plus side, I played pretty well on Sunday. I played probably the best I've ever played in a tournament. I was probably a B+. I still didn't full on bring my A game, but I felt pretty good overall, hit a lot of nice thirds and was there. Missed some stuff that I'm just not used to. There was a lot of speed ups that I, again, wasn't sort of prepared for in the middle. And we had some issues, you know, letting balls go out that should have been out. So that's all stuff we can work on. But overall, it was a really good experience and I'm looking forward to it. I will absolutely be more prepared by doing a lot of jump rope or something before that tournament, being ready.
Yeah, one thing you did not mention, and I know that in the beginning of your tournament days, which are not that long ago, is you did not experience a case of the nerves, which I know was an issue. You were struggling to get serves in, and it sounds like you've acclimated and you belong at this level. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't have any yips. I had massive case of the yips. For those of you who haven't heard that show, my very first tournament, which I played like a month after I started playing pickleball, I couldn't get a serve in. Like, and I had a pretty good serve, but I could not hit the square with a serve. I had 27 faults in two games. That was my first two games I've ever played in a pickleball tournament. And ironically, it was the same tournament that Mateus played. That was his first tournament as well. I did not play him, but it did not go well for me at all. It was that case.
Look how far you've come.
Well, thank you, Scott. I know you are exhausted. You need to get some sleep for your tournament this weekend. Folks, I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed sort of the insight on what it's like to be in the middle of a tournament and how to respond to some of the adversity. I'm looking forward to getting back in the lab and making my game better for my partners and for myself. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys, as always, for leaving ratings and reviews. If you haven't already, it's a huge deal for us if you post in your Facebook groups and on your Instagram that you listen to the show and then you can link it up. So 402p.com/Apple will take them right to the Apple Podcasts app. 402p.com, that's the number 402p.com/Spotify will take them right to our Spotify page. So if you could do that and also leave a rating and review, that is totally huge for us. So for Scott, I'm Michael. You guys enjoy yourselves. Go have some fun on the pickleball court. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.